You are listening to On the Daily, the RotoViz Daily Fantasy Sports Podcast, powered by RotoViz Radio.
Hey everyone, I'm Matt Friedman, Matt at the Oracle of Fantasy Labs and RotoViz. Welcome to the October 7th, 2017 NASCAR edition of On the Daily. I'm joined by Dr. Nick Giffen, an editor at RotoViz, a PhD in mathematics, a three-time qualifier for the DraftKings NASCAR main event, and one of the best NASCAR DFS players in the world. You can follow him on Twitter at RotoDoc. Nick, how's it going?
Hey, Matt. I'm doing well. It's obviously been quite the week here in Las Vegas, of course, but got me a little behind on NFL. Luckily, my NASCAR planning doesn't start usually until Tuesday when we get all the data in and stuff like that. So I'm not behind on NASCAR. I'm ready to go. I'm excited for the next round of the playoffs. We've finally cut from 16 to 12. So let's do it. NASCAR, baby.
Yeah. So first, let's talk about Dover before we get to this week. Last weekend, the race at Dover. Bum, bum, bum. Kyle Busch overcame a poor handling car early on to take a late lead from Chase Elliott to secure his second straight win. You also secured your second straight win. Actually, I don't know if it was a victory, but you advanced. You advanced for the second straight week to the third round of the Fantasy Racing World Championship. So talk about your lineup at Dover.
Yeah, it was interesting because I wasn't sure how many people would end up on my lineup. I figured plenty would, and I felt like there was more of a decision between Truex, Kyle Busch, and Kyle Larson than it ended up being. It turns out every single person, all 15 of us, ended up with Martin Truex Jr. And I think in a format, you know, where you go from 15 to 10 and Truex starts in the pole, it's pretty hard to get away from him. But, I really thought there was some merit to possibly putting Kyle Larson in my lineup. He looked like he had a really fast car on the long run. In the 10 lap average in final practice, he was only like fourth or fifth, but we also have to remember he had a 15 minute penalty. And then even after that, he made his run later in his part of the session. So he went on old tires and he went late. So I figured he had a very good car, but I didn't use him. Five people did. So five people used him. And, they all did pretty well because Kyle Larson did end up dominating a chunk of that race. I think one of them ended up falling out and not making it because one of their drivers had a problem, maybe Trevor Bayne or somebody like that. But so it was really a debate on using Truex, Kyle Busch, Kyle Larson. And with Truex and Kyle Busch starting 1-2, it was too hard for me, especially knowing my tiebreaker situation where I basically owned the tiebreaker over anybody except the other guy who qualified the first week with me. It was too hard to get away from Truex and Kyle Busch. So they were kind of gimmies. Matt DiBenedetto was a gimme. He was 100% owned. Jamie McMurray was 100% owned. So I mentioned Kyle Larson was 33% owned. And if people had Kyle Larson in this event, they did not have Kyle Busch. So Kyle Busch was only 66.7% owned. And like I said, I had him. Then I rounded out my lineup with Jimmy Johnson, who qualified 17th and is probably the best Dover driver of all time with 11 career wins at Dover. He started 17th, so plenty of value there. And then finally, I rounded out my roster with David Ragan, who qualified 28th and had really good practice times. And it all worked out for me. When the first caution came out, it came out at a weird time. A bunch of people had pitted. And there were five drivers that had yet to make their pit stop. They were kind of trying to extend their fuel window. David Ragan actually turned out to be one of them, as did Kyle Busch. So that really benefited me because David Ragan now was one of five cars in the lead lap when everybody else went a lap down. Of course, a bunch of them got the wave around, and so David Ragan didn't end up finishing up there in fifth because a long race to go. But the idea is he stayed on the lead lap the whole race, moved up from 28th to, in around 21st or 20th, something like that, and was really a big boon to my roster. So just between the fact that I could play it pretty conservative with my situation there, I went with a pretty chalky roster. Four other people had the exact same roster as me, including the other person that qualified the first weekend with me. So this week, of course, I think a little bit different story.
Yeah, so let's continue to talk about the Fantasy Racing World Championship. Well, actually, first, before we do that, I should remind everyone, of course, that you can get a 30% discount to a special NASCAR pass through the NASCAR podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/NASCAR podcast. With that pass, you get unlimited access to all of Nick's NASCAR content, and your subscription, it supports the pod. Also, of course, it is NFL, so, you know, subscribe to RotoViz's NFL package through the podcast, rotoviz.com/podcast. Okay, now let's get back to talking about the Fantasy Racing World Championship. So this week, it's the third round. It functions essentially as a double up because there are 10 players remaining and only 5 advance to the final round. So without giving away too much, how are you preparing for this round of the main event?
Yeah, I'm just going to pick names at random. No, I'm just kidding.
That's what I do.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's why I have you as my co-host here.
It's worked out really well for both of us.
I think so. But no, in all seriousness, the way I'm preparing this weekend of course, I've watched last year's second race at Charlotte. There was the first race this year at Charlotte, which I think is also important to understand the dynamics of the racing there. But especially because we'll talk about this later, but the compound, the resin will be added again. So I really wanted to study the first race this year. Obviously, there's going to be some differences, but the idea is studying a lot of the races, studying Charlotte history, and then I think the other thing that's going to be very important for me this weekend in terms of my prep is just really, really, really deep diving on practice this week. I think this is going to be a hugely important week for practice, and the reason is because we'll talk about it, but qualifying a little interesting this week. Of course, you know, a lot of weeks it seems like Truex, Larson, and Kyle Busch are right up there, 1-2-3. You know, they were 1-2-3 last week in qualifying. Not the case. None of them qualified inside the top three this week. So I think there's going to be a pretty heavy focus on trying to sort out dominators, trying to sort out the best place differential guys, and I think a lot of that will come from studying practice. So that's going to be my key here. Obviously, I'm going to look at some things in practice that will be, I think, important, not just 10-lap average, but some other things as well, and that I don't completely want to get into. And then there's a couple other tricks I have up my sleeve that I also don't completely want to divulge, but I'm pretty excited. This is 10 down to 5. You know, it could either be total disaster or total sweetness, because advance into that last five, you're guaranteed at least $10,000 with a shot at the $50,000 first prize at a restrictor plate track, which is, of course, as everybody knows, I tend to do well at those.
Yeah, and obviously there's a lot that you don't want to say, so I'm going to ask some follow-up questions. Okay, so one of the questions I have, previously there's been a lot of chalk, and so you've had a lot of people settle on the same lineups. And so one would be that the concern that you might have going from 10 to 5 about a replication of lineups, but then it also seems like that might not be quite as applicable this race because some of the drivers that ordinarily would be chalky aren't in great position. So does it seem like more of a wide open field in terms of driver selection this week?
I definitely think so. I think we could see 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 unique lineups. Honestly, I really think we could see a ton of unique lineups. I don't expect many duplicates at all. I think people end up in a lot of different things, and it's not because anybody's doesn't know what they're doing or anything like that. Everybody who's here knows what they're doing, period. I think the reason people end up in different lineups is because qualifying certainly ended up pretty different from what we're used to. We don't have one of the big names right up in the top three. Kyle Busch did qualify fourth, which is, you know, I guess important there. But, you know, Truex qualified 17th. Kyle Larson qualified 10th. Jimmy Johnson qualified 25th. Joey Logano, 28th. You know, there's a lot. Eric Jones didn't even make a qualifying run. So there's a lot of place differential potential with some big names. But you also, with 334 laps, need dominators. So who are going to be those dominators? There's a lot of ways this race could go, period, you know. And so I think this is a week where we could see 8, 9, 10 different lineups. And it's going to come down to really strategizing around what you think the competition is going to do, what you think makes the most sense in terms of dominators and place differential, and also what you think, you know, I guess knowing your tiebreaker situation anyway, just in case you do end up in a tiebreaker scenario, which I do own that. So I can be, I think, a little more conservative, but I'm not worried about being conservative. I'm worried about putting in the best lineup that I can, because I do think there's going to be a lot of spread of lineups. And this is the first time it's a 50-50, right? Week one was 25-15, so more than half the field, three-fifths of the field qualified through, and then this past two-thirds qualified through. So this is a true 50-50. I think there's, especially with a lot of, it almost feels like an NFL 50-50 in some ways, that you could just have 100 people enter and have 100 different NFL lineups in a 50-50. I think we could see that this weekend in NASCAR.
Awesome. Going to be very exciting to track that. And what is the money that is at stake right now? So the people who get booted in this round, what do they finish with?
They finish with $6K, which is, nothing to sneeze at, of course. But with a $50K prize up top, you definitely want to put yourself in a position to at least make that final round. Talladega, we know anything can happen. Restrictor plate, wrecks happen, and you only get one bullet. You don't get multi-entering like I have the opportunity to do. But I still think you want to get into that final five because it's going to be so important to give yourself a chance. The good thing I have going for me is 2 years ago when I qualified for the Fantasy Racing World Championship, Charlotte was one of the races I qualified for. This year, the one race I qualified for the Fantasy Racing World Championship this year was also the first Charlotte race. So I'm hoping I've got the Charlotte magic with me.
The Charlotte magic. That sounds very mathematical.
Yeah. Well, and I'm also I just moved from North Carolina, so it should be like my home track, right?
There you go. Home track advantage. Okay, before we talk about Charlotte, let's talk about the NASCAR playoffs. So we had the first cut from 16 to 12. Casey Kane, Kurt Busch, Austin Dillon, and Ryan Newman didn't make it through. Ricky Stenhouse Jr. was the final car through on points. So what are the current playoff standings as we move into the second round?
Yeah, so it's actually pretty interesting because the playoff standings have changed a little bit because NASCAR continued to award playoff points during the first round of the playoffs. So earlier, Kyle Larson going into the first round was the number two seed. And now that Kyle Busch actually got two wins and won a stage or two, he's actually leapfrogged Kyle Larson in the standings. So they've reset the points. Martin Truex Jr. has 59 playoff points. Kyle Busch now has 41 playoff points. Kyle Larson, 34. So those are the top three. We'll talk about the contest in a minute, but for the contest purposes, the seeding reverts to the first round. But now they've kind of reseeded everybody. Martin Truex Jr. is one, as I mentioned. Kyle Busch about 18 points back. Kyle Larson, 25 points back from there. Keselowski, Johnson, Harvick, Hamlin, they're all pretty bunched together. Even Ricky Stenhouse Jr., they're all within 10 points of each other. So Ricky Stenhouse Jr. is in eighth. Even though he was the last car to make it in, because he had those two wins at the restrictor plate tracks earlier this year, he got 10 playoff points for that, which is more than Ryan Blaney, Chase Elliott, Matt Kenseth, and Jamie McMurray have, rounding out the rest of the playoff field there. So Jamie McMurray already 56 points behind Martin Truex Jr. because of playoff points. So that's almost a full race. Jamie McMurray definitely will have his work cut out for him, but hey, he was the 16 seed and made it down to the final 12. So, he's the last seed here. He could still make it into the next round, the round of eight.
All right. So you mentioned earlier in passing the RotoViz NASCAR playoff challenge. Let's talk about that in more depth. On Wednesday, you posted an article with the bracket. So remind everyone what the RotoViz NASCAR playoff challenge is and how they can win and how they can participate.
Yeah. So it's like we've been talking about. If you haven't been listening to the pod yet, we've got this playoff challenge, and I posted an article. So if you go to the RotoViz website and look up the NASCAR articles, it'll be the most recent NASCAR article. We have a main header there, and you can click on NASCAR articles and go right to that most recent article. But what you do is you go there, you download the playoff bracket, and the bracket is essentially kind of like an NCAA-style bracket. You're going from 12 teams down to eight. Eight drivers down to four. I should say drivers, not teams. 12 to eight, eight to four. And then the final four, you're picking the order that they finish. And there's points allocated for each driver advancing, as well as for finishing position in the final championship round. Plus, you get bonus points for the driver's seed, or double bonus points, or even in the final round, triple or quadruple bonus points based off the driver's seed. So obviously, it rewards you to pick the right drivers going as far as they can and getting them right. But it's a cool contest. We ran this 2 years ago and a lot of great entries. I think the winning entry only won by 3 points, so I expect a lot of close competition this year. And when I post my article after final practice on Saturday, so recording this Friday night, of course, on Saturday when I post my final my article after final practice, again, I'll have a link to that original article in the bracket again. Make sure you download that. Fill it out. Email it to onthedailydfs@gmail.com. I know, Matt, we've already had plenty of entries.
We have had a lot of entries. It was pretty impressive to see them all come in very quickly. Nick.
I forgot to mention the prizes.
Yeah, what can people win?
Yeah, so first place, a lifetime pass to RotoViz, all of RotoViz, everything, NFL, NASCAR, NBA, PGA, whatever else we end up coming up with in the future, all of that forever. And the more important part, a RotoViz athletic pullover, which I think are arriving either late this week. I don't know if anybody's gotten any yet, but probably most of them are arriving next week. And when I get the RotoViz athletic pullover and we get a winner from this contest, I will mail it directly to you. So you will get a RotoViz athletic pullover. It's sweet. It's like gray. It's got the bright red RotoViz logo on it. You know, all that nice polyestery zip, half zip thing. So it'll be fun. That's the true prize in my opinion. Oh, second place.
That's the best prize. And Nick, I have to say, I'm wearing one right now.
Did you get yours?
I got mine today.
Nice. That's
and,
good to know.
The wife really liked it. She saw it and she was like, wow, you've really made it. It was like, right, wow, that's impressive. Like that's better than the hoodie that you normally wear.
I can pat myself on the back because I designed that. So
it looks really good. Kudos to you. And obviously, that's the big prize. Lifetime to RotoViz. I mean, that's just money. But this
Matt,
athletic.
You realize you have to like send me a selfie afterwards or something.
No, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, Matt's too cool for that. He also is, by the way, drinking Miller High Life Light.
That's a rumor. That's unconfirmed.
I had to do it. I mean, if it's, you know, talking NASCAR.
Okay, second
prize. Anyway, second prize, a one-year pass to – sorry, I should say a lifetime pass to all of the RotoViz NASCAR content, which is, you know, everything we've done this year. We've done a great job. We've had a lot of wins. We've had a lot of readers win. And you could be potentially one of those readers that wins with a freebie pass for the rest of your life. And then – third place will be a one-year pass to the NASCAR RotoViz subscription. I think actually I put up there on the rules you can choose either NFL or NASCAR for both of those, the lifetime and the 1 year. So whether you want NFL or you want NASCAR, your choice. And make sure you enter. Also, I decided to write in the rules as a little surprise to the current subscribers. If you are a current season-long subscriber to either NFL or NASCAR – or sorry, to NFL or NASCAR – you get an extra entry, and if you're subscribed season-long to both, you get two extra entries. So
wow.
You can enter up to three times if you're a season-long subscriber to the NASCAR pass and the NFL pass, or if you're one or the other, you get one extra entry. Don't worry, I've got your email, so I know if you can enter twice or three times or not. But the cool thing is with that, even if you're not a season-long subscriber now, you can get that 30% discount to the NFL pass, 30% discount to the NASCAR pass. Either rotoviz.com/podcast for NFL or rotoviz.com/NASCAR podcast for NASCAR. Get a 30% discount and become a season-long subscriber and get that extra entry as well.
Awesome. And since we were pimping some of the rotoviz.com/NASCAR podcast stuff, I should say NBA is also coming up. They're starting to put out some NBA podcasts, so obviously
yes,
start
definitely.
To check that stuff out as well.
And that subscription will be ready on Monday. So
awesome.
We're gonna crush NBA this year. It's gonna be fantastic. I'm so excited.
Yeah, I just have to say, and just like such a great time of year. I feel like I say that like every October, like early October. But you have baseball, the playoffs, NBA is coming up, the playoffs for NASCAR. We're really getting into like the meat of the season for NFL. It's just such a great time of year.
Yeah, college football, and then college basketball will start up soon. Yeah. I mean, I know it's a great time of year. The only thing is like, you know, golf kind of winds down here, and I guess like tennis does too, but nobody plays fantasy tennis.
Yeah. Okay, so any tips, any like hidden tips that you might have for strategy for the RotoViz NASCAR playoff challenge?
Yeah, I think there's a couple major tips, tricks. First of all, really pay attention to the current playoff standings. I mentioned Martin Truex Jr. has a 56-point lead over Jay McMurray without even this round having started. So make sure you pay attention to the playoff standings. You know, Martin Truex Jr., Kyle Busch, Kyle Larson, they're not well, especially not Larson, but they're pretty much shoo-ins, but I would say maybe Larson's more like a borderline shoo-in to the final round. You know, we'll get some more winners here in the second round. The third round, we're going to be 8 going down to 4. So it's good, you know, one bad race could put you in a really bad spot if you're going from 8 to 4, whereas from, you know, 16 to 12, if you already have a 50-point lead, one bad race is basically just wipes out your 50-point lead. So really pay attention to the playoff standings first and foremost. Second, we're coming up to some interesting tracks. We got Charlotte this weekend. Then we got Talladega. Then we have Kansas. And, you know, there are certain drivers that do better at these tracks than others. So make sure you research into track history, track type history, because two of these are, of course, 1.5 mile ovals. And then we've got the restrictor plate race. So make sure you're really researching which drivers. And I would put less emphasis on the restrictor plate race because obviously anything can happen there. So don't just shoo in Ricky Stenhouse Jr. to the next round because he won the last two restrictor plate races because it's a lot more random. But, you know, definitely pay attention to those mile and a half and pay attention to who has a strong track history at Charlotte and at Kansas. And, you know, if they have a good history at Talladega, it certainly doesn't hurt.
Okay. Let's talk about Charlotte, which is a 1.5 mile quad oval. I feel like I could say that for almost any of these tracks, and it would be right. It is similar in shape and banking to Atlanta, but it has a newer surface. So the first race at Charlotte was the Coca-Cola 600. It was a night race. This weekend, the race is during the day, and that creates, I'm assuming, some sort of difference in terms of the racing that we see at Charlotte. Nick, talk to us about that.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's a couple things that I think will be different. Obviously, the night-to-day aspect could change things. Usually at night, it's a little cooler. There's more – so the air is a little more dense. Also, the track temperature means the tires can grip a little bit better. It's not as slick. So also the fact that the air is more dense means you get more downforce, and also you get more grip. So it's a lot easier handling on the car at night. But what that also means is – typically, it's a little bit harder to pass at night than during the day because the guy who's out front with a clean air has the great downforce, the great grip, and it makes it less of a race where, you know, it's hard to pass. So it's funny because the first race at Charlotte this year, the Coca-Cola 600, was preceded by the All-Star race. And the All-Star race was the most boring race I've ever seen in my life. There was almost no passing. And so then they tried to add this resin compound, whatever you want to call it, to make the racing better. And it did make the racing better, but it was still a night race. I think during the day, we could see a little bit more shenanigans, I guess, going on. You could see some passing, some multi-groove racing. And if you get out of that resin, you can hit the wall. We've seen a couple drivers already hit the wall in first practice because, as it turns out, when NASCAR was or the track, I don't know if it was NASCAR or the track, but when they were applying the resin, it didn't quite get down evenly in turns 3 and 4, so they got out of the resin, were expecting it to be there, and overpushed it and got into the wall. So a lot of ways this could go, but I think we will see more competitive racing. I don't know if that means we'll see more passing, though, or more cautions or anything like that. I know you and I, Matt, you asked me about New Hampshire, about the resin and the multi-groove. Does that make for more or less cautions? It actually ends up making for fewer cautions, fewer DNFs, I've found. So we could see a race that maybe doesn't have as many cautions, doesn't have as many DNFs.
Probably the best question I've ever asked in the history of the show, other than all the questions that you've written for me to ask.
Yeah, it might have been the best one you ever asked that, you know, I didn't actually write out for you.
That I came up with, yeah.
Yeah, it was a very good question. Well, and it's funny because Charlotte, I was looking, you know, at DNF rates or problem rates, I should say, and since 2014, which 2013 is when the Gen 6 car came out, but really they started cutting some downforce in 2014 and 15 and 16 and 17. The DNF or problem rate, I should say, is almost exactly 20% in both the first race and the second race, which I think is interesting because the first race has 100 more miles, but still the same DNF rate. So that said, about 20% of the car is DNF, but if we're going to see fewer cautions here, possibly, maybe we'll see a little bit lower than a 20% DNF rate because we haven't had the compound here before with the fall race or the spring race. So You know, I definitely think it's possible we see a lower DNF rate than the 20% we've seen in the past, but who knows? First time it's been a resident of the day at Charlotte.
Okay, so last race, night versus day. Another thing that's different is the number of laps. So the first race was 400 laps, and it was broken into four stages instead of the typical three. This weekend, it's only 334 laps, and we get three stages, the first two of which are 90 laps each, and then the third one is 154 laps. How does that impact the strategy compared to the first Charlotte race?
Yeah, so I actually don't think it does impact strategy at all. Those 10 laps aren't going to mean a whole bunch for fuel strategy. They'll mean nothing. Everybody's going to have to pit, you know, whether they're doing a 90-lap stage or a 100-lap stage, you're going to have to pit one time. So before the end of the stage, and then you'll pit again at the end of the stage. The only real major change is that final stage now is a 154-lap stage instead of two 100-lap stages. So that's where the strategy is going to change. You know, 154 laps, you know, that you could break that into probably you're going to pit twice in that, even if you go green the whole way. So that would be the big change there, is that final stage. The first couple stages, we're going to see the same thing. But I think it'll be pretty interesting because we know Austin Dillon won the first race, the Coca-Cola 600. And even though it was broken into four stages, it still ended up a fuel mileage race, which the Coca-Cola 600 always seems to end up as a fuel mileage race. I don't think we get a fuel mileage race here. That's my best bet. So I think the way it changes is we probably don't get a fuel mileage race. That said, you never know. A lot of times the fuel mileage racing depends on when that last caution is thrown. But I think in this case, we probably will not see a fuel mileage race at the end, which won't shake up the order as much. So I think this one will probably be a little more unpredictable than the 600.
Okay. Let's talk about statistics. Which statistics should DFS players use to consider or to gauge driver performance for the race this weekend?
Yep, it's unfortunately, I don't have any super insightful things here because it's our typical mile and a half. So what we're going to look at with Charlotte, because it is a track that historically has been harder to pass on, we are going to look at starting position. That will matter. You know, it is a tough track to pass at, although I think the compound probably reduces that a little bit. So don't put too much emphasis on starting position, but starting position and finishing position certainly correlate here, whereas other tracks we mentioned, New Hampshire a couple weeks ago, had basically no correlation between starting position and finishing position, at least when you factor in other variables as well, like practice and stuff. But here we can also factor in practice variables. The 10-lap average is highly, highly significant, and obviously that's going to be a big thing. I already talked about focusing on, you know, watching the practice sessions, et cetera. It's going to be super important this weekend, so make sure you pay attention to practice, not just the practice times, not just when they go in the session, but follow the driver Twitter chatter, you know, the media chatter, everything like that. One thing that happened last weekend with the 10-lap average is very important, but it turns out after 10 laps, Kyle Busch's car petered out, and so that's why he didn't dominate that first portion of the race. Even though he had the fastest 10-lap average in both the second and third practice sessions, after 10 laps, his car was junk, and so there was no chance for him to lead a ton of laps if his car became junk that quickly. Fortunately, they had a long race, 400 laps, 400 miles, a lot of pit stops. They were able to fine-tune the car and get it right for the end of the race, but he was not a dominator for the race at all at Dover last weekend. So make sure you're paying attention to practice beyond just the 10-lap times or when they went in the session, things like that. This year's driver rating or this year's performance, very important, and performance at the large ovals this year as well, also highly important. Unfortunately, not a whole lot beyond that. I mean, that's really what these mile and a half come down to pretty much race after race after race. The only difference usually is Atlanta, where there's a lot of tire wear, or Auto Club, which is a 2-mile oval, which also has a lot of tire wear. But all of these that have, you know, tires do wear at Charlotte. They don't wear at the rate they do at Atlanta, but at least at Charlotte, you know, it's less tire wear than Atlanta. It's more along the lines of a lot of these other tracks, so it's your pretty typical mile and a half oval.
Okay, so a follow-up question on this. Charlotte was the last year, so the fall Charlotte race, that was the first race of the second round last year also, correct?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I'm curious as to the dynamics that we see with it being the first race of the second round. Do we normally see the, not the chase drivers, but the playoff drivers, do we normally see them, I guess, how do they normally race in comparison to other drivers or in comparison to whether this is like the second or the third race of the round? Do we normally see them be a little more conservative in what they're doing?
Yeah, so that's actually a really good question because I think it actually depends on the playoff round. So going from 16 and 12 is 75% of the field advances. 12 to 8, only 2/3 of the field advance. And you have another unique thing about the second round of the playoffs is Talladega. Right. And it doesn't matter if Talladega is the second race or the third race, but of that round, it's still a wild card race because you never know when you're going to wreck out of that race. You just never know. You could play it as safe as possible, ride around in the back. And this time, Talladega is the second race of the round. So the drivers who had a very good first or second round and were very good point shape last year, or I think it was 2 years ago and last year, could just kind of ride around the back at Talladega, avoid all the big wrecks, and just kind of, you know, wait until the last 10 laps to kind of make their way forward a little bit. So NASCAR moved that to the second round of the second race of the second round this year. So Talladega, you can't hang out in the back now. You can't, because you don't know what's going to happen at third race at Kansas. If you have a problem at Kansas, well, you can't sit there and ride in the back at Talladega because you don't know if you're going to have a great race at Kansas or a terrible race at Kansas. So it really throws things. So what that does for Charlotte is everybody needs to have a good race. They should not be gambling too much. Obviously, if you're in a position to win, you want to put yourself in that position to win and stay in that position to win and do the best strategy that will give yourself the best chance to win. But sometimes it's okay to sacrifice the win to give yourself the best opportunity to not fall back too far as well. So I don't think, you know, if there's a point in the race where there's a kind of like a bifurcation where you either finish all the way up front or you finish 20th, you're probably not going to take that decision. Instead, you'll take the other decision where you're probably just going to finish 5th no matter what. That's probably what most teams should do, unless you're a big underdog like Stenhouse or McMurray. I could see maybe a couple of them gambling.
Interesting. Okay, so obviously at RotoViz you have models. How accurate is the model for Charlotte?
We do have models at RotoViz. I'm one of them, right?
Boom, boom.
The model for Charlotte.
You're a hand model, Nick. It's not that glorious.
Yeah, that's true, unfortunately. But I will be modeling the RotoViz athletic pullover on Twitter whenever I get it. But anyway, that was really bad. But so the model is very accurate for Charlotte. It's the third or second most accurate race, depending on the way you define the accuracy. Well over 0.6, and you know, that's right up there with Phoenix. I think it's right there, top two or three, super accurate. But I will say, we have never had a spring race or a fall race on the resin until this year. And there was a little bit of shakeup, of course, in the 600, obviously because of the fuel situation. But we don't know how the resin is going to impact things. I have a feeling it won't impact it too much because we actually tend to see fewer cautions with the resin, which means we tend to see fewer shakeup in the order. So I don't think it'll be any less predictable, but it usually is one of the more predictable tracks in all of NASCAR. Again, the caveat being we don't know about the way the resin will shake things up. And Charlotte has started to age a little bit. I know it's not as old as Atlanta. It's twin track that we talked about in terms of tire wear and abrasiveness and all that stuff. But it is aging. I mean, it was paved over 10 years ago. I think it was 2005 was when it was paved versus Atlanta was, you know, 2007 versus Atlanta was 1997 or 8 or 9 or something like that. I don't have that in front of me, but you get the idea. There's a big difference between the two. But the gap is closing, so it makes Charlotte probably a little less predictable than in the past. If you get more tire wear, needing to pit, needing to use more strategy around tires, that does shake things up a little more. So I don't know if it'll be 0.65 or 0.62 predictable like the model approximately gives, you know, but maybe 0.58, 0.6 up there. That's still one of the top three or four races or race tracks in terms of predictability.
Okay. Let's get to the picks. Who are the drivers you think will dominate this weekend at Charlotte?
Yeah, I kind of just want to give like the shrug emoji or whatever that one is because I have no idea. You look at qualifying, and you've got, obviously, Denny Hamlin, who qualified first, Matt Kenseth second. You kind of want to pick, probably, you know, most people want to pick Hamlin to be a dominator, and he does have a pretty good Charlotte history as the fourth best driver rating at Charlotte over or since the Gen 6 car in 2013. But he doesn't have a dominator history. The dominators at Charlotte in the recent history have been Truex, Johnson, Harvick, and Chase Elliott, with even Casey Kane thrown in there, but that was more like 2013, 2014. So the very recent dominators, the past 2 years, you know, if you're looking at, well, let's say 2015 and 16, and then the first race this year at 2017, you're looking at Truex, you're looking at even Logano, Johnson, Elliott. So those are the guys you're looking at. We can probably rule out Joey Logano given where he's starting and how bad he's been this year. Jimmy Johnson, you can probably rule him out. Truex started 17th, so you can kind of almost rule him out as a likely dominator. So now you're like, well, who's going to dominate? You know, I didn't mention Kenseth or Hamlin, who are starting Hamlin first and Kenseth second. I didn't mention Kevin Harvick, but Harvick has qualified on the pole twice in a row here and almost qualified this time, a third time in a row. He was 0.03 seconds off of the pole, yet he's starting third. So I don't know. I mean, this is the most interesting race of the year, in my opinion. I think it's perfect that this happened for Fantasy Racing World Championships 10 down to 5, because we could see a ton of different lineups. So right now, I think Kevin Harvick is probably the most likely dominator, given he's starting third, given he's been very good at Charlotte recently, the second best driver rating over the last 2 years, or last three if you include this year. But Denny Hamlin also, I think, is pretty likely the third best driver rating over since 2015 at Charlotte. I'm worried about in the long run whether Denny Hamlin will actually have the best car. But those two seem to be the most likely, given that they're starting first and third. You can't rule out Kyle Busch starting in fourth, but this is not one of his better tracks. So very interesting, because of the three drivers that we're talking about, the big three, Larson, Busch, and Truex, Kyle Busch is the worst of the three here at Charlotte. Hasn't had a great history here. I think this is the only track he's never won at a points-paying race in NASCAR. So makes it just a really crazy weekend for dominators.
Interesting. So a lot of potential dominators there. What do we normally see in terms of the number of dominators at this shorter Charlotte race? Not the longer one, but the fall Charlotte race.
Right, yeah. So the fall Charlotte race, we typically see two. Occasionally, we see three. If I look, you know, back through Charlotte history, it tends to be that. You know, I 2014, Kevin Harvick, 162 laps led. Jeff Gordon, 74. Kyle Busch, 41. So that was a three-dominator race. But then you go to the next year, it was basically just Joey Logano, 227 laps led. Sam Hornish all by him, or Sam Hornish second, but only 22 laps led. I should say there was another dominator there who did not finish, and that's why I don't have that listed. But then the next year after that, another two dominator race. So it's two to three. I know with the 600, we usually get three to four. So it's usually one, on average, one less dominator than the 600, because we get the fuel mileage, because we get an extra 100 miles of racing. It just allows for that many more things to happen. But this is like your typical mile and a half, two to three dominators. With the way Charlotte was in the past, it was two most of the time, in some threes, given it was harder to pass at, less tire wear at night. Now it's a day race, more tire wear, stages. I think we could see potentially three dominators this weekend.
Okay. Cash game picks, who are you looking at?
Well, you obviously have to go with Eric Jones. He didn't make a qualifying run, so he is starting all the way back there in 38th position, just because he didn't get to make a qualifying run. Three drivers did not make a qualifying run. It was Eric Jones, Corey LaJoie, and Brett Moffitt, but you're not really picking Corey LaJoie or Brett Moffitt. You're picking Eric Jones there in 38th. Very obvious cash game play. Joey Logano, I think, is in play for cash games, as is Jimmy Johnson. They start 28th and 25th. I think what it's going to come down to is Joey Logano going to be the Joey Logano of old here? If not, you probably want to go with Jimmy Johnson. Then I think you need to take some dominator shots in cash games, because that raises your floor. You know, starting a Denny Hamlin, maybe starting even a Kevin Harvick, and then figuring out who else you want to go from there. So it really becomes a couple – you get a lot of decisions here. Who do you want to start in Dominators? How many Dominators do you want to start in Cash? Or potential Dominators, I should say. Do you pick Jimmy and Logano? One or the other? Both? Neither, right? Do you fade Erik Jones because he has a history of wrecking this year and is not a great cash game play in general when he's starting a little further forward because he has a lot of wrecks this year? But this is like the most wild week because everything that can happen, you can almost give a reason to do to play the driver or to not play the driver. It almost feels like in some ways the way the NFL is becoming these days, you can kind of almost give you a reason for playing or not playing. Almost, it feels like almost any NFL player, but I feel like that's this weekend at Charlotte. Like Erik Jones is starting 38th and you have to play him in cash, but like, I wouldn't be surprised if he wrecked out given his wreck percentage this year.
Okay. GPPs. Who are you looking at?
Yeah, I think Matt Kenseth is a super interesting GPP play. I didn't mention him necessarily as a dominator over Hamlin and Harvick, but he does have a very strong history here, and his price is super cheap. So if he does dominate at 8-6, something like that, it's a huge, huge boon to your lineup that you get a guy who's 8,600, dominates, and picks up – let's say he dominates a good portion of this race – he ends up picking a ton of points up. He could provide 12, 13, 14x value, which is awesome for NASCAR. So I definitely think Matt Kenseth is in play as a dominator. A couple of other interesting picks, I should say, as a contrarian play, but also a contrarian dominator for Matt Kenseth there. A couple other interesting picks. Jamie McMurray, I think, will go overlooked starting in 18th. Charlotte has been one of his best tracks. He has multiple career wins here. All-star race. He's won this race, not the 600, but he's won this race, the fall race at Charlotte. It was his first career win. Also came at Charlotte, which was three races into his career, or four races. So Jamie McMurray, this is a very good track for him, and I think he gets overlooked starting in 18th place, given the fact Truex starts 17th, you've got Johnson 25th, you got Logano 28th. And I know Jamie McMurray probably is not the best GPP play given the fact that he is a playoff contender, but I also think that actually in a way will get people off of him, and I actually think that boosts his value because he's a guy that will just be super consistent. He'll make his way forward, he won't put himself in trouble, and he'll probably finish fifth or sixth, right? And not probably, but he has a very good chance of finishing fifth or sixth just by being Jamie McMurray at Charlotte. And if he finishes fifth or sixth at his price tag, he could end up in the winning lineup. They did price him up, though, 8,800, so that also could keep people off him. I think he's going to be really low-owned, and I really think he's a super interesting GPP play because I don't think anybody's going to be on him. They're going to be looking at Truex. They're going to be looking for place differential starting 17th. They're going to be looking at Hamlin or Kenseth for dominating, or Harvick or Kyle Busch or Larson, Jimmy Johnson and Logano for place differential. Those guys are going to be all chalk. All of them are going to be chalk. So who are we going to pick at a higher price tag? I think Jamie McMurray might be that guy we pick at the higher price tag, just given what he can do here. We're talking, distributions, range of outcomes. He has that upside that we want, while relative to his ownership percentage, it's going to be, I think, pretty low. Another driver I like Trevor Bayne starting 26th. So we know we've already ruined the show given the fact that we're talking about Trevor Bayne starting 26th and playing him in a GPP.
Well, fortunately, the show's almost over. So
yeah.
And who are we kidding? It was ruined before this, but
that's true. I do want to say one thing about Bayne. He's been really good at the mile and a halfs in the large oval category in general this year. That Roush Fenway Racing team, which used to be a powerhouse of NASCAR, has struggled the past couple of years, but they've really made strides this year, especially at the large ovals. Trevor Bayne, 19th best driver rating, starting 26th. You get a little bit better than that average finish, he could be in the winning lineup at a $7,000 price tag.
I feel like you're talking about Trevor Bayne just to throw some of your potential competitors off in the main event. You know what I'm saying?
Why would I do such a thing?
Because you want to win.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Because you're a winner. All right. Joe Dirt Cheap driver. Who are you looking at?
It doesn't make sense that this driver is priced like a Joe Dirt Cheap driver, but it's Eric Almirola. I know he qualified 24th, so it's a little bit far forward for him, but Eric Almirola has been very good, again, at the large oval category this year. So I like looking at that category because it makes a lot of sense to look at. Given the fact that it is a large oval and given the fact that they all really are important. So he's got the 23rd best driver rating. I know he's, again, I mentioned he starts 24th, but let's say he beats his average driver rating there and finishes 20th, then you're, or 18th or something like that. Then you're getting a driver's priced at $5,800 who could finish 18th and pick up place differential, sixth position, something like that. That is going to be a nice day. You're going to get, you know, something like 26 plus six, you know, 32 points for drivers less than $6,000. That's over 5x. You're going to love that. You're not going to get that from any other driver in the Joe Dirt cheap range, probably 6x at all, unless just absolute batshit crazy stuff happens. So Eric Almirola, I think, is the GPP Joe Dirt cheap play. If you want a cash game Joe Dirt cheap play, Brett Moffitt is the guy. He didn't make a qualifying run. He will pass some drivers, and he's priced at min salary, $4,500 this weekend. So I have no problem playing Brett Moffitt in cash games, even some GPPs. Obviously, if you, you know, we've got a lot of expensive drivers that have the potential to do something this weekend, and certainly Brett Moffitt in play as a play in all four. I mean, if you're a cash game play in NASCAR, you're also a GPP play. It's not like the NFL where like some guys have maybe a limited ceiling but a very high floor as well. If you have a high floor, you also have a relatively high ceiling in NASCAR. A little bit different of a DFS sport there. So Brett Moffitt is in play in Joe Dirt as well.
Okay, who is your pick to win the race as of now?
Dude, I have no idea. I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's Kevin Harvick. I don't know if it's that much of a limb given how good he's been here, but he hasn't completely dominated here, which is the thing that does scare me a little bit. I will say at the large ovals this year, in terms of, you know, races that that have been run at the large ovals this year, Kevin Harvick, second best dominator percentage, 14.2% of laps led, which pales in comparison to Martin Truex Jr.'s 35% laps led. I mean, that's more than almost, you know, one third of the laps that Martin Truex Jr. has led. So I think it'll be Kevin Harvick. He's got a good starting position. Charlotte's been a good track for him. He's dominated at large ovals this year. And I just don't think it's going to be one of the big three. I don't have a compelling reason for it other than their starting positions. And the way they're starting is kind of inverted of what you'd expect from them. You'd expect Kyle Busch to be the worst here, but he's starting the furthest forward. Kyle Larson, you expect to maybe be second best here. He's starting second best. And Truex, you expect to be the best here, but he's only starting 17th. So we'll have to see. But that certainly presents some challenges for all three of those guys. So I'm going to give it to Kevin Harvick as my pick to win.
Okay. So closing thoughts. So Road of His Life. There's a Road of His Life show this weekend. When is that?
Yeah, so we've been, since NFL started, we've been doing 7 p.m. Eastern time, but that's not going to happen this week, so not 7 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday. It'll be 5 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday, which is, of course, the day before the race. So 2 hours earlier than we've been doing the last 2 weeks, 5 p.m. Eastern time, 2 p.m. Pacific time, Road of His Live, same format, rotoviz.com/live, hashtag RV Live to ask your questions. I'll answer them all. The article, so qualifying, or sorry, practice, I'm getting ahead of myself here, practice ends at 2:30-ish, 2:20, something like that, Eastern time, and so that'll be 11:20 Pacific time. I'm still thinking on Pacific time, but then I'll probably do the article for 2 hours, get the article published within in the apps updated within 2 hours after final practice, and then we'll give me a half an hour to kind of switch gears, get Road of His Live going, set up all the YouTube stuff and everything like that, and we'll be good to go. So 5 p.m. Eastern time. Gosh, I hate time zones. 2 p.m. Pacific time, Road of His Live.
Time zones are difficult, I have to say.
They are, man.
They give math geniuses lots of problems.
Yeah, exactly. I don't do this arithmetic crap.
Okay. That's going to do it for this NASCAR edition of On the Daily. For Nick Kiffin on Twitter at RotoDoc, I'm Matt Friedman, Matt F. The Oracle. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you for listening to On the Daily, the RotoViz Daily Fantasy Sports Podcast, powered by RotoViz Radio. And special thanks to Randy E. Aguabo for the introduction. Please review the podcast on iTunes under the established RotoViz Radio feed. Contact us via email, onthedailydfs@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter @onthedailydfs.